You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're drawing a line in the sand, but you don't have to really worry about that because, you know, there's like the tide, which is going to like wash the sand away and any impressions you make in it. If you enjoy your trip into the midside here today, please tell a friend. Referrals are number one source of tourism. Alternately, you can support us on patreon.com/themidside, or you can buy a t-shirt on themidside.com/store. I'm your host, Justin M. Wozneski, and joining me on this trip today from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
I am not the creepy whisperer. Just to clarify.
Process of elimination.
Yeah, that's I'm just right. Going to start whispering under everything you guys say because I find that's really conducive to other people thinking while they're talking.
It's a good test of your focus. That's right. Happy to be here on this trip in the midside. What a farcical week it was, as it is most weeks. So happy to delve into that.
Are you? Because some weeks, usually the weeks you're not on, you're like, man, this is the week I wish I was on.
Yeah, that's a rhetorical tactic so that you don't feel so bad for not having me there.
Arrogant prick. Also
no, I mean,
joining us.
The 1 week, seriously. Hey, I'm talking. The 1 week that... I'm talking. It's my turn to talk. The 1 week I wasn't there, what, 2 weeks ago, you did have some of the best news of the entire year, and I did not get to partake. And that was genuinely upsetting for me.
Well, then vote in the year-end awards for that week for most biggest farce of the year, right? The Crowd Award?
That's right. That's
the Midsider right. Award for most farcical story of the year. Vote for that, guys. Yeah. That has Daniel's endorsement. Can I go now?
Okay, you can go now.
Can we not make this whispering thing a thing? It's like not good pod at all. It's terrible. I was just ignoring it and hoping, like, James, it would just play out in your mind, but apparently you're going to stick with it.
Who are you? Who are you, the arbiter of good pod?
On my pod, yes. Also joining us from the hills of white privilege, James Elias.
Would you say that on this pod you are God?
No, I would not say that.
You wouldn't say that? Okay.
I would say I like the rhyme. But I'm nothing like Eminem in that capacity where I would be like, I'm a rap god, I'm a pod god. No, it's just no.
All right.
But speaking...
I wonder what that relates to.
Yeah, I was going to really... I thought that was a good transition I had already set up. So speaking of that, let's see what the hell Eminem did this week to drive everyone into a frenzy. It's time for The News with Daniel T. Richards.
Center. It really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fact.
This is one of those news stories where it was an enormous deal that I had no idea it happened because I am so removed from this world of stuff. So the article that we're reading is from Billboard, and it's titled, Are Eminem's Conservative Fans Ready to Accept That, quote, line in the sand? Not so fast. So, apparently, Eminem dropped a video this week. I don't even know. I honestly don't know what some of these words mean.
It was a video during the BET Awards. So that gives you more context as to why he had the content he had.
Because the noun here is it's a freestyle cipher, which I don't even know what that refers to.
So freestyle and rap is where they just rap off the dome, as they call it. It's just completely extemporaneous.
Okay.
And you know
what
a cipher
is? Cipher?
Well, you know what a cipher is. What does a cipher mean?
A code?
Right. A cipher is how you unlock a code. It's the key to unlocking a code. So he was delivering a freestyle cipher for our current culture.
Wow. And I thought classical music was pretentious. Okay. It was called The Storm, and in it, the rapper from Detroit, Michigan, spit scathing rhymes such as, quote, "The fact we're not afraid of Trump, fucking walks on eggshells, I came to stomp. That's why he keeps screaming drain the swamp, because he's in quicksand. It's like we take a step forwards, then backwards, but this is his form of distraction. Plus, he gets an enormous reaction when he attacks the NFL, so we can focus on that instead of taking Puerto Rico or gun reform for Nevada." End quote. This, of course, caused an uproar among many of Eminem's fans who happened to be Trump supporters. Several tweeted things like, quote, "I used to like Eminem's music, but if you have to trash the president to stay relevant, I'm done. Bye, Felicia. Bye." The user Deplorable CKC tweeted, quote, "I was a fan of Eminem. He drew a line in the sand. I'm out. Hashtag MAGA." One person filmed themselves, either trying to choose if they want to keep their MAGA hats or their stack of Eminem CDs, and it's decided to throw away the stack of Eminem CDs. CDs. He said, "Thanks, Eminem, for deciding for me to throw away these CDs."
To be fair, if you're going to visually do that, that's the way to do it.
CDs.
As opposed to, like, chucking your computer's hard drive out a window.
Yeah, you can't, like, have one hand on the mouse and one on the hat, and then you, like, have the hat over the trash can and the mouse over the empty trash button. Like, it's not as visually impactful.
Or just, like, showing someone your iPhone and deleting Eminem from your Spotify playlist. Yeah. Like, it's a less physical gesture.
Yeah, we'll allow them the artistic license on that one.
So, Justin, right, will you be throwing away your Eminem CDs now that he has come out so adamantly against our God Emperor?
Well, if I can find them wherever I have all my CDs now that I've changed everything over to digital, as you're saying. But no, I had a really interesting reaction to this story emotionally. I mean, I was sad at first because it's like, even though I'm not a Trump supporter, I still feel like he was talking to me with the line in the sand comment, because I do not dislike Trump for the reasons they're saying. I am not on their side. I'm not on either side here. And that's what makes this really difficult for me, because we've documented very well on this show why we don't like Trump. And I've documented why I don't like Trump. But I also don't agree with the way the left goes about attacking him and the things they say. I don't think he's actually a racist. I don't think he's actually a fascist. So to hear Eminem rap about those things, especially since Eminem was always counterculture, and now he's up there, as you're saying, being fucking pretentious and being one of these people telling us what the truth is, which is just the mainstream truth that everyone's repeating all the time. I mean, Eminem is now saying what you get when you turn on Stephen Colbert, or you turn on Jimmy Kimmel, or you turn on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. So he is no longer the counterculture figure he once was. Remember when he was against the feminist social justice warriors in the 90s? He was sort of the first line of defense against them.
Anything about him. Just want to be clear about that.
Okay, well, you'll have to take my word for it then. You know, he was attacked for being homophobic. He was attacked for being misogynistic. So he was sort of like the first line in the war against the feminist social justice wars. He was ahead of his time, right? The whole performance with Elton John where he's like, look, I can use these words, but that doesn't mean I'm homophobic. These are two different things. You guys aren't looking at the reality of the situation. So to see him change so drastically, and then for me, who's such a big fan of him, to have to feel like I have to make that choice, even though I'm not on either side here, I was actually really glad to find this article and to see the people at the end who are like, you know what, I'm just going to separate the two. I just have to ultimately separate the art that he once created, and, you know, who knows what he's going to create in the future again, from this current freestyle and this current content he has. Because, hold on, before you go, let me finish. Let me just finish.
Talk now.
You can.
Daniel.
This seems to me, it's a lot of just pandering and marketing to his target demographic. That's what I think it is. Trying to stay relevant.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, that's a plausible theory here.
But the reason my theory, hold on. The reason it's my theory is I think he believes these things, but he never said these things before. Now he's saying them. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So there are a couple of things about this. One is false dichotomy, bro.
Yeah, which is definitely.
He may, you know, there are a lot of things about this that are potentially false dichotomies, but like he may still be anti-social justice and anti-feminist, but also anti-Trump. Sort of like
that's us. True.
Oh, trying to give me an out here.
Not with the type of reasons he gave for being anti-Trump. Those were pretty SJWE reasons, if I'm remembering them correctly.
Yes, and he's an idiot. I'm just kidding. Yes, and maybe he's just not expressing himself well. Is you know, I don't know. Look, I'm trying to give commentary on someone I barely understand as a human being. So please keep that in mind. Okay, two is this element of the culture. I had to refresh my coffee there. Two is this element of the culture where everyone is brave for saying the exact same thing needs to die. Please. This whole, he came out against Donald Trump. Oh, he's so brave. He's so brave. Look at his words. He's so brave. Just like every other entertainer in the entire industry.
Yeah, so didn't we go through this with Kathy Griffin too?
Yeah, so brave. What she did, pretending like she was decapitating Donald Trump, so brave. It's just incredibly brave of her. Everyone's saying the same thing. You're not brave. You are literally the opposite of brave. It is mainstream in its entirety to hate Donald Trump. And that's fine. Hate him. But, like, coming out and doing this whole thing and expecting accolades, it's idiotic at this point.
And it's easy politically. Yeah. Like, you could be a Republican and then just... You could be a Republican to just say, yeah, I don't like him.
Oh, yeah. You'd make the news like, for 48 hours. And you wouldn't
even have to compromise your principle. Like, you could just, like, you know, E puts their microphone right into your face, and then you're just like, yeah, I don't like Donald Trump. That's all that's required of you.
Yeah.
Well, totally. Isn't that the thing, totally. Though? You're saying not to expect accolades, but you just said it. They'd be in the news for 48 hours if they did that. And look how everyone was praising Eminem all over social media all week for this. Isn't that the problem, that we're giving accolades for something that shouldn't be accolades?
Sorry, what I mean in particular is accolades from your base or your core fans or even, you know, the plurality of people. You get accolades from the media and Hollywood, all of whom are already on board with this. But this is the third thing I wanted to say, which is that my initial reaction to this marketing point that you're making is either that it's true and he's dumb, or it's not true and he's completely misread something. And what I mean is, like, look at the NFL. Oh, we're going to be all social justice-y and make sure that players can kneel during the national anthem, and their fucking ratings are tanking because of it. Like, they completely misunderstood their core constituency, and this whole thing that they were trying to do to be showboaters and virtue signalers is now wildly backfiring with the people who actually consume their product. So my point is that if Eminem is doing this for marketing reasons, he's at least misunderstood a substantial portion of his own audience. And it's a bad
marketing gimmick. I think you're 100% correct. And the question is, how and why is he misunderstanding? In the same way, how and why is the NFL misunderstanding? And there's sort of two things I can posit with this. There's the social media echo chamber, which creates this idea of this is what the world believes, where it's really disconnected from reality. So my question is, how much does that have an influence? And also, how much does the racial echo chamber have to do with it? Now, Eminem is white, but he is immersed in black culture. And then the NFL is also immersed in black culture. Many of them. Not all of them, right? I mean, the NFL is much more racially diverse than we like to pretend it is. But certainly a lot of the people protesting, like Colin Kaepernick, who started out with it, again, he's half white. But he's definitely in that racial echo chamber. So how much of it has to do with the social media echo chamber, and how much of it has to do with the racial echo chamber? And when I say racial echo chamber, I'm not even saying all black people believe this. I'm just saying that there's a certain segment of that population that is part of this echo chamber.
Well, and this is one of the things that people who provide products are going to have to very quickly learn, which is you need to actually understand your product and not understand this sort of faux environment in which your product resides. And if the media has done anything to harm people who sell things, it's to give them this impression that everyone who buys shit is some leftist social justice shill. That is not a good thing for people who are actually trying to sell something, because then they will immediately go to that posture every time there's a controversy, and they're going to fucking lose their core base of people who actually have money to buy their shit. So be a good marketer, not someone who just goes with the trends, Eminem. Understand the people who actually buy your CDs and market yourself accordingly. Now, if it's a marketing thing, it could be he genuinely believes these things and marketing be damned, but...
Well, that's one of those where it's hard to find where the line begins, right? To a certain extent, when your entire life has been spent in the public eye pandering to a certain extent, then yeah. where does that end and begin, right? I mean, that's the whole Kardashian problem too, right? Like, where is the actual Kardashians and where is just the image they've created? It's hard to find that in today's day and age. But the question I have for you, and maybe this is a bit too esoteric, but isn't this what you're talking about? The difference between being audience-focused and content-focused? Know your own product and know what you're selling, and that's the primary. And then find the audience, not cater everything and even change your product to the audience's whims. I mean, can you imagine if car manufacturers were like, oh, well, we're going to say, like, you know, we're going to change the way this accelerates because we're going to change the design of the accelerator because of the way the audience is responding to it.
I don't quite get that example, not to be a point shitter. I'm trying to figure it out very quickly in my head.
It was the best example I could come up with. I was trying to figure out something that the functionality is completely dependent on reality, not dependent on anyone's perception of reality in their head.
I got you. Because some of our passengers are disabled and can't use the accelerator, we're therefore going to remove the accelerator from all cars.
Right. That would be a social justice way of doing it.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Well, the famous saying is from Henry Ford. He said, if I asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse and buggy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
But I figured this out instead.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, Eminem used to be, as a counterculture figure, ahead of the curve because he did what Ford just said. He wasn't giving the rap culture, he wasn't giving the rap art what it already had. He was giving it something different. And now... he's regressed to the mean, and he's giving exactly what everyone else is doing.
This is what some of the older guard on the left intellectually are struggling with right now. Marr came out a little bit like it this week, but I'm thinking of like a Camille Paglia, who is a feminist and was in the counterculture movement. And her whole point as of late has been the left used to be counterculture. Now the left is culture and quote-unquote conservatism, which she calls it, is counterculture. And the left hasn't figured that out yet. The left hasn't figured out that they dominate all of culture, and thus they act as if they are still the rebels when they're totally not.
Yeah, definitely.
And something they're going to have to figure out in order to survive if they plan.
Which is really funny and really pathetic that they still consider themselves like the oppressed rebel minority.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
Well, that's because that's psychology. That's when you tie up your identity with that, there's no way to adapt. Right? They live their whole life that way.
Yeah, but like that your identity is so tied up in something that is so counter to what's true. It's just really funny.
It is funny. So you have the left speaking out of both sides of its mouth, of course, which is we are the counterculture. We are the brave ones. We are being oppressed. Oh, on the other side, by the way, you don't get to have free speech. We get to control everything. We get to run your lives.
And we represent the voice of what people are really feeling.
Yes, absolutely. So it's like, what the fuck are you actually talking about? Anything else on M&M before we move on to M&Ms?
Oh, you took mine.
No, I think
well,
that's
it turns
good.
Out that obesity among U.S. adults has reached an all-time high in the United States. We're number one. Nearly 40% of adults and 19% of youth are obese, the highest rate the country has ever seen in adults, according to research by the National Center for Health Statistics. Since 1999, there's been a staggering rise in the prevalence of obesity, particularly in adults, without any signs of slowing down, according to the lead researcher, Dr. Craig Hales. Youth obesity, though, if there's any silver lining, has been pretty stable in recent years. However, it's too early, quote-unquote, to tell which direction youth obesity prevalence will take. At least 4 more years of data are required to truly understand the direction. Justin, why are we all so fat?
Because we hate ourselves and we're lazy. And those two things are very much related. I didn't realize you were going to ask me such a direct, pointed question. I mean, before I even go into like how angry this makes me, I just want to say that initially it does make me very sad, because it hurts the quality of life for all of us when this is the culture we're living in. I mean, mm-hmm. think about that. Like, just what is it? You said 40% of adults are obese?
Yes.
I mean, that's still the minority. It's 60-40. But still, like, that's a low majority, 60%. 60%? Yeah. I mean, that makes me feel pretty good, because with all the working out I do and trying to eat healthy, I must be in the upper, like, 10% or some shit like that.
The only time you're going to reach the 90th percentile.
Yes. Yeah, no shit, right?
So there are a couple of things about this article that made me think. So one is sort of a always be cautious about what we hear statistics-wise point, which is nowhere in here do they define obesity.
That's true.
What that means. So actually, that's not true. They do later, but it's a body mass index thing, which is...
I'm obese based on the body mass index. Justin's obese based on the body mass index.
Yeah, I went when I went
your
to the
newborn
doctor,
infant is obese something. Based on the body mass index. Yes.
Yeah, when I went to the doctor in the spring in like May, you know, I was around 155. I'm around 152 now. But he told me, he's like, don't gain any more weight. And I was like, why? He's like, well, that'll be too much weight. And then I looked up BMI, and I'm like on the upper edge of the BMI for my height. But I don't think they're factoring in muscle at all. Like, yeah, I agree. If it was all fat that I had.
The BMI was constructed in like 1830, when everyone was basically dying of starvation by today's standards. And like everyone was like 5'2".
Yeah. So there are truths about this article, right, that we need to take totally seriously, which is that I do think people in general are how do I say it in a very politically correct way?
They're
retaining
fat.
More fat
They're
than
fat.
They should.
They're gross, disgusting slobs. Get to the there gym.
That's right. Put down the cupcake, fatty.
Body negativity. Hashtag body negativity.
That's right. So people are eating more sugar. They're eating more grain. They're eating things that are bad for them. They're retaining more weight, which is ultimately very bad for them. But at the same time, we need to be cautious about the kind of statistics thrown around, especially when it comes to government. And that is the second point I wanted to make about this, because this paragraph to me was a little bit laughable overall, which is, quote, what is very striking about this information is that there has been a 30% increase in adult obesity and 33% increase in youth obesity from 99 to 2000 data, despite government-focused efforts to address the issue, according to Michael W. Long. They haven't done enough, said the professor. It was very striking that we've had an increase in obesity, even though the government tried to fight it. Has no one noticed the fucking drug war or the war on poverty or anything else the government has tried to fight?
That's what I was going to say.
That gets worse and worse.
The government does, the opposite happens.
Yes.
Whenever they try to fight something, it makes it worse. Why has no one figured that out yet, James?
Why hasn't everyone figured out what yet?
Why hasn't people figured out that for every action of the government, there's an equal and opposite reaction
because,
reality?
Which exactly? Yeah, like, I mean, in this case, yeah, it's not straightforward in this case. I mean, I don't know if any of them are straightforward, but in this case, from what I've read, I read this book, Why We Get Fat by Gary Taubes, which I was a little suspicious of because Taubes sounds suspiciously like Tubbs. So I'm like, why should I read a book about how to get skinny from a dude who sounds like Tubbs? But, you know, that aside, name aside, he had some pretty interesting thoughts on this. And one of the big things, effectively, he didn't have this sort of language, but one of the things he brought in is that the obesity epidemic is partially, in his mind, caused by the duty premise, where instead of being encouraged to make smarter choices, there's this emphasis on like you need to just use willpower and eat less and exercise more, when biochemically that's just not what works. You need to make different choices to change your biochemistry, and long story short, that means eating less carbohydrates. It's more complicated than that, but that's a quick way of saying it is carbohydrates are essentially the problem. But if you start telling people, like, you need to exercise and, like, they do this duty premise, you run out of willpower very quickly to stay on your diet or stay on your exercise plan, and then you give up, and then you get fatter in the long run. So that to me is one of the factors that I've read about personally.
That is definitely one of the factors, James, but the direct connection with the government is twofold. One is the government has been involved in nutrition in schools since, what, the 40s or the 30s? Basically telling kids what they can and cannot eat in schools, to the point where I used to bring my lunch from home all throughout school because I was one of these kids who didn't trust the government by the time I was 8. And by the time I got to high school, it was basically like, you can't eat your lunch from home in the cafeteria because it's not sanctioned food. Like, if you're bringing your lunch from home, you have to eat it, from other kids.
Oh, my God. What the fuck?
Yeah. So there's that, where the government's been involved in nutrition. And, of course, that means the food pyramid, which means all the grains on the bottom. Eat all the grains that you want and eat only a tiny bit of meat and fat because that's bad for you.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then two is subsidies. Subsidies, subsidies, subsidies. The things that are subsidized most in our culture, food-wise, are sugar and corn, which is a form of sugar. Also, there's wheat subsidies, a form of sugar, and a bunch of other subsidies where basically you take all these foods that would be much more expensive in the marketplace. You make them essentially free for people, and especially for companies, and so they put them in every goddamn thing there is. Pick up any food in the store that goes through any amount of processing, and they'll have added a fucking metric ton of simple corn syrup to it. And you just ask yourself, why? And the answer is, it's more addictive. If we put corn syrup in this thing, people want to eat more of it, and therefore they'll buy more of it. We need to end the subsidies, and we need to end the government monopoly on schools so that they can stop telling our children to not eat, sardines and eat more fucking pudding. The amount of pudding that was shoved in my face in schools is insane. Like it was a goddamn health food.
Yeah,
don't eat whatever you're eating. Eat this pudding.
You would think after what happened with Bill Cosby, they might pull back on the pudding a little bit.
Don't shove the pudding in someone's face. That is very, very
wrong. I agree with everything you're saying, but it's really interesting to me that you're finding these very direct links. When isn't there something to be said about government keeping people in a state of dependency? The whole idea that we're all victims. So no one will, as this goes back to what James is saying about the duty principle, nobody's seeing fitness as a choice. Nobody's seeing health as a choice, that I am going to make this choice and do these things every day to have the better life for myself. They see it as, if they do it, it's an obligation because this is just a, naturalistically, if we're talking about it artistically, it's the idea that I am beholden to these constraints. Therefore, this is what I must do, and I must suffer through this. When I go to the gym, it's not suffering. I enjoy it. And every day, it's just, you take it one day at a time, and you go, what am I going to do today? In the words of Tom Brady, earn it every day. What am I going to do to earn it every day to have my best life? And I don't mean that in, like, the Instagram, social media way that everyone's throwing around my best life now. That's the number one thing I hate about all this shit. You know, when we start talking about body positivity and everything, they co-opt the language of the rational, healthy, virtuous life, and they use it to defend these irrationalities that are excuses for not working hard. And that's all what contributes to this, is this idea of, I'm a victim, I'm bound to the constraints I'm in, so I have to love myself for what I am, not love myself for exerting the effort to better myself every day of my life.
And honestly, Justin, while I agree with everything you said, and I think the working out thing is incredibly important, in most instances for obesity, it is overwhelmingly the food choices.
Oh, 100%.
Guys, speaking of food choices, I'm getting sick. I'll be back in like 3 minutes. I'm really sorry to break the show here, but yeah.
We're going to soldier on without you.
All right. I'll be back.
Okay.
Notes for other podcasters out there, if you have your microphone on mute and no one can hear you throw up, there's no need to bust into the show and say, hey, everyone, I'm going to throw up. You can just do it and come back and we will not notice your absence. So
all this fat talk made James sick.
Yeah. No, what were you saying?
That it's food. It's food choices.
Oh, yeah. I agree. That's even the first choice before the working out. And that's what I'm saying. Is it just the fundamental choice of saying, okay, I'm going to wake up today and I'm going to make good choices with my food? I mean, I get in the habit and I get addicted to sugar where I will eat it every day if I don't control myself. But then I just go, okay, tomorrow I'm just going to go one day without eating sugar. And then one day becomes two, becomes three, becomes a month, becomes a year. I mean, I did that when I first quit soda. Remember, I used to drink Coke Zero Cherry all the time, which they're getting rid of. Rest in peace.
Now it's Coke Zero Sugar Cherry.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Oh. Yes. They've changed the formula and they put the word sugar in it. One, it's an awesome double marketing feat that Coke has pulled off here. One is you put the word sugar in it, even though it has the word no in front of it. People automatically associate positive vibes with sugar. So there's that. But then also the people who are looking specifically for non-sugar alternatives now have the words no sugar in a soda. So you win on both ends. It's they're geniuses. No, it fucking sucks, but they're geniuses. Okay. Yeah, I'm someone who struggled with weight my entire life. I've gone up and down pretty radically over the years. But there are certain principles that that I've noticed throughout my life, and they're anecdotal, but I think they're ultimately universal. One is the whole cutting calories in order to lose weight thing is not sustainable at all over a long period of time. It works pretty well for a certain period of time, but eventually it just feels like you're starving all the time and it never goes away. And that's really hard. Talking about James' point about focus or willpower, it's really hard to maintain that willpower over years when you just constantly feel like you're starving. So there's that. I don't think that works. And two, when I do cut sugars and carbs, even though it is ridiculously hard after like, during the first couple days, because you just crave sugar like you can't possibly imagine, after that, I couldn't give a fuck if I ate sugar ever again. Like, it doesn't bother me at all. So like day one through four, really effing difficult to not eat the goddamn donuts that are brought in every single day to the workplace. But after day four, it doesn't. You could put the donuts on my desk and I wouldn't touch them the entire day. Like, it doesn't even matter after that point. So anyone who's struggling with that, if you want encouragement, to use the phrase that's used for gay teens, it gets better.
Jesus. You know?
That's right. It gets better. And when I don't, like, literally when I don't eat sugar and carbs, I sleep better. I have more energy. It's easier to exercise. Like, my brain functions more clearly. It's kind of it's taking, like, this haze that has physical weight to it and lifting it off of yourself and just being able to see the world and breathe. It's like exiting Plato's donutty, sugary cave and seeing the light for the first time. So,
and everything you're talking about being in the cave, you know, with this, you can't always be in a constant caloric deficit and bringing in donuts every day. That's what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about, it's about living your best life. All you have to do, this is what you have to do. If you want to out there, this is going to turn into self-help. But if you want to improve yourself physically, this is what I want you to do. I want you to sit down and think and say, what do I want to be like physically? And how do I get there? What is the life I have to live to get there? And then just start living that life. Now, it's going to be hard at first because you're going to have to be adjusting where you're not going to eat the donuts that are brought in every day, or you're going to stop bringing in the donuts every day, or, you know, you may have to change the type of food you're eating, or you may have to find a new caloric amount to eat every day. But it's not just simply this ping-ponging and this immediate changing, this yo-yoing where I'm going to be down 800 calories for 2 weeks to drop 20 pounds. Like, it doesn't work that way. Who do you want to be? What do you have to do to get there? Change your life so you can come up with a daily way of living that gets you there.
Yes. It has to be a way of life. It can't be a thing you see as being temporary. It has to be a thing that you can see yourself doing every single day for every single meal.
Well, and that's the thing, so I want to be clear about these fitness people too. And this is part of the reason I don't go on Instagram much. And when I was on it a lot, I had to start blocking fitness people because they are constantly in a cycle of bulking and cutting. And that's not healthy either, because you're not creating one sustained way of living for your body, and your body's constantly yo-yoing that way too. And what I'm talking about is they'll gain a lot of muscle, but when they gain the muscle, they also gain fat. So then they cut down their body fat percentage. And it's built upon the bodybuilder mentality where they go to these shows where they have like 6% body fat. And everyone who, not everyone, but a lot of people who work out now try to do that same thing. And it's just not a healthy way of living a normal life. Like, if you're not a bodybuilder, ask yourself, why are you trying to live a bodybuilder's life?
There you go.
I think a lot of times the reason is that, at least what I see a lot of times at the gym, is I get the sense that they have problems other than their health and their body, and they're kind of trying to avoid them by focusing on something that they do have control over. So a lot of times it's a deeper mental health issue.
Totally. Speaking of mental health issues.
That's one of my joys of the gym. Hold on. That's one of my joys of the gym, is I can, no matter what goes on every day and the way people are dicks and they suck, I can always control what goes on at the gym. So I get that. No matter how much Russia tries to manipulate, I can always go to the gym, and it doesn't matter what Russia's doing to me.
One thing about this show...
Did you really think I would let you
is that from week to week, it can be a sports podcast, it can be a movie podcast, this week it's a health and fitness podcast, but you know what can always tie it together is the fucking Russians doing something stupid. This is a great article from The Hill. Russian-linked campaign used Pokemon Go to meddle in election.
No. I always say this like I'm surprised, but
Mobile app Pokemon Go is reportedly used by a Russian-linked campaign to meddle with U.S. politics. CNN reported that a Russian-linked campaign called Don't Shoot Us, likely run by Moscow-linked troll farm Internet Research Agency, used Pokemon Go and posed as part of the Black Lives Matter movement. Oh, it gets funnier. The Moscow-linked actors appeared to be the source of the campaign that had a goal to raise racial tensions by bringing up incidents of police brutality. The campaign posted on its Tumblr page to urge users to play Pokemon Go as part of its contest. It encouraged users to find Pokemon in places where police brutality had happened, and then to rename their Pokemon after the victims. Wow. Niantic, the makers of Pokemon Go, said this in a statement, quote, "It's clear from the images shared with us by CNN that our game assets were appropriated and misused in promotions by third parties without our permission. It is important to note that Pokemon Go as a platform was not and cannot be used to share information between users in the app, so our platform is in no way being used." This contest required people to take screenshots on their phones and share over other social networks, not within our game. So Niantic is panicking, because they don't want to be dragged into this whole Russia-Trump election meddling nonsense. Justin, how many of your Pokemon Go did you name after people shot by police officers?
Zero, because I stopped playing after, like, the first 2 weeks or weekend, because I was like, this is really boring as shit.
But it encourages kids to go out and walk. It's going to single-handedly defeat childhood obesity.
Okay. I literally have no... That's so retarded when people were saying that I have no response to that, and I never did. I mean, that's a whole different argument.
Why is that retarded? That's a whole different argument. So what else can we... The real argument is, what else can we associate with the Russians at this point? Right.
When will Funko Pop be appropriated by the Russians to meddle with the election? That's what I want to know.
Well, that's what I was going to talk about here before we somehow got hijacked or something. I don't even know what's going on right now. But no, that's what I was going to say. Like, this is being taken as some sort of win, right? The idea that, oh, we finally found the link between the Russians and the election, correct?
Well, this and other things. Like, we found out that, like, Russians used Facebook ads to pose as Black Lives Matter and Antifa and all these things to mess with the election. And they've been basically playing both sides of the issue to raise tension among people. That's how they, quote-unquote, meddled in the election.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If we're so far down that this is how we're saying the Russians are meddling with the election, okay. Like, you've proven how pathetic you are that you have to stick to this story. Like, really? I mean, the makers of Niantic came out and said, Pokemon Go, this is how you use Pokemon Go. And... the Russians used Pokemon. Like, really? This is where we're at as, like, to try to make this link?
Well, doesn't, even if you take this link seriously, even if you're able to think about Pokemon Go and its influence on politics with a straight face, doesn't this look bad for the left? Like, if you repeat stuff like this, then that's basically just the same thing. It's kind of like calling someone a shithead. Like, there's no actual intellectual content to the statement. You're just saying, I'm making it known that I'm on this side of the issue. Yeah. Like, when you bring this up, there's no actual content. It's just, oh, the Russians meddled. Look, they're fucking Pokemon Go. Black Lives Matter. But if you think about it for like a moment, then it's like, wait a second, if we accept your logic, then you're saying that Black Lives Matter is tearing apart the integrity of our culture.
Yeah. Right, and that's the whole...
Which makes them sound pretty bad, doesn't
that's
it?
That's the whole Russian meddling thing, is they need a defense. And they need a defense to explain why they lost the election and to explain why what we talked about with the Eminem story. Why they're not actually the majority, even though they're pretending to be the majority. Because anyone who thinks about it is going to go, well, you guys are just a bunch of assholes who are either on late night talk shows or on social media acting like you're the majority when you're not. And they need a response to say why, even if they have the truth of the world, which they say they do, how to improve the world, why they're not. You know, why if Hillary was so obviously the better candidate, did she lose to Donald Trump? This is their way of saying, no, don't give up on us. Don't give up on us. Oh, it's the Russians. I mean, this is like a girlfriend who cheats on you and then is like, no, don't blame me. It was that girl over there. It wasn't me. She made me do it.
Something like that. Yeah. 0 for 2 on the analogies. Yeah.
But come
you'll get better
on,
as the show
man.
Goes on. You'll get better as the show goes on. You need to warm up a little. It's a little earlier than we typically record. So,
by the way, speaking of the fact that it's a little earlier that we record, have you noticed that whenever we record in the morning, James throws up? Like, James, do you want to tell us something? Are you pregnant?
It's my morning sickness. No, I think it has something more to do with the fact that every morning I have, like, eggs with a bunch of hot sauce on it. And I really like that, except the consequences. So
yeah,
maybe
as
I
we
should
were just
stop
talking about with
that.
Fitness. Know yourself. Know the life you want to live. I personally do not want to throw up every morning.
But I want to live a life with hot sauce in it. I just don't, my conceptual faculty hasn't discovered the future yet.
Well, speaking of a world,
you have to
make
sacrifices.
World with dire consequences. Experts have told Congress that a single EMP attack by North Korea will destroy the United States. Yes. Amid an escalating war of words between North Korea and President Donald Trump, an expert told members of the House Homeland Security Subcommittee Thursday to look at the state of disaster-stricken Puerto Rico to understand the havoc an electromagnetic pulse attack by Pyongyang could wreak. An EMP attack done with high-altitude detonation of a nuclear weapon could knock out the U.S. power grid and bring life to a halt, Peter Vincent Pry said during a Thursday afternoon hearing. Quote, look what's happening in Puerto Rico now if you want to know what the consequences of an EMP attack would be. 3 weeks after Hurricane Maria whipped through the island, destroying nearly all the electricity grid, only 10% of 3.4 million Puerto Ricans have power. Justin, but if North Korea takes out the electrical grid in the United States, how will Russia use Pokemon Go to meddle in our elections?
Oh, man, I don't know. It's outside interference all the way down here, isn't it?
Yes, it's a foreign disaster all the way down. That's right. Are you really afraid of North Korea? And should I be really afraid of North Korea? Because to answer my own question, I don't give a fuck about North Korea. And maybe I'm just completely off here. But
that's what I was just going to ask you. That was my question. That's not fair. Because I have the same reaction. This smacks to me of... they're trying to make up reasons for us to be afraid of North Korea. Like, next they're going to start telling us we need to duck and cover if there's an EMP attack. I mean, that's what this is to me. That's
just duck and cover. Yeah. Just duck and cover.
Exactly.
You know that song? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Here's the thing. Do we really have that big of a national security hole that somebody can just launch, what is it, a missile at a satellite? And deliver an EMP that will shut down our electrical grid? That's what they're claiming, right?
Kind of.
I hate to say this, Justin, but our national defense is provided
by the government.
No, I understand that.
So.
So what you're saying is, salesman. If based on the earlier principle, the opposite happens. So rather than defending ourselves, the government just leaves us vulnerable.
Yeah, well, yeah, not to advocate for private security companies, but yeah, we have the government that we have. So,
but well, this Dan is my question, expert, right, about North Korea.
Yeah,
they can't fire a missile over the ocean. Over the Pacific? Can they really get a satellite into space that can deliver an EMP?
Yeah. I don't know. James is our resident gun expert. Should we be afraid of North Korea?
I don't feel comfortable really giving a real answer to that question, but here's some things I can say, is that North Korea is a regime that is obsessed with its own self-preservation. I think they'll do things that weaken us, but at least in the foreseeable future, they're not going to do things that are openly aggressive against us, because they would fear at this point that we would still have the strength to retaliate if they hit us big for real. That being said, they will use their increasing power to keep getting more and more, to extort more and more concessions from us, and that's a
bad
thing.
My fear with North Korea is not for the United States. I just don't think North Korea has demonstrated they have the technology to actually harm us. But if you think about, like, okay, yeah, North Korea couldn't launch a missile across the ocean to get us, but they could literally carry one across the border into Pyongyang, or into Seoul, sorry.
Well, they don't need to. They have a nuclear bomb's worth of cannons actually pointed at Seoul. Like, they're just regular-ass exploding shell cannons, and there's so many of them that if they fire them all at once, it basically
levels
the city.
Okay, so I'm
going to
ask you guys
a
question about Korean culture, then. If that is true, and the Koreans... Well, I don't... It's not, like, racist or anything. I'm not going to ask you about eating dogs. My question is, if they know that somebody's got all those cannons armed with nuclear bombs pointed at them, why aren't they going after North Korea? Wouldn't they go after them if they thought that was a real threat? And if they don't think North Korea is a real threat, well, what the fuck do we have to worry about?
I don't know the answer to that, but I would suspect that it's sort of like an Israel situation where the United States helps them, but also asks that they not actually defend themselves. Because, like, they should have had an airstrike happening as soon as the first cannon.
So is that
built.
Why they started throwing those moon pies over? That was the one weapon that was acceptable from the United States government?
Good callback to an earlier story.
That was like two or three seasons ago,
parachutes.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
I do not
that
remember
was
the moon pies.
The South Koreans were attaching
moon
pies to parachutes and throwing them over the border because North Koreans love moon pies, but they can't get them in their country.
Oh my god, I remember hearing about
that. The moon pie
bombing.
Yeah.
That's so sad. And moon pies are
terrible. That's life in North Korea, James. That's how bad it is.
Yeah.
The moon pie is your favorite dessert.
There's moon pies, and they can't be influenced by the Russians because they're not allowed to play Pokemon Go either. I mean, that's North Korea.
Perfect society. No one's fat, can't be meddled with by Russia. Perfect society.
Don't give the left any ideas.
Oh my god, that's such a good integration.
This is a scenario where typically, being on the objectivist side of things, I'm very much in favor of decimating our enemies. But this is certainly one in which I don't, I mean, I'm not an expert, but the options I've read don't seem to be actual military options in this scenario, because we've put ourselves through years of bad foreign policy in a situation where if there is a military intervention, Seoul, South Korea will be wiped off the map by conventional weapons or otherwise. And that just seems to me too high of a price to pay to solve this militarily. So I don't know. It's a bad situation overall. But it's because there have been a series of bad decisions made over many, many years. So
I just want to know.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes to.
How do you get to speak in front of Congress? Because we just let some crackpot guy who's like, they got an EMP and it's going to kill 90% of Americans. Like.
Do do you picture this guy wearing a cowboy hat and lighting a nuclear bomb?
Yeah, and then after he says it, he shoots two guns in the air.
That's right.
Yeah.
It becomes less absurd once you realize, Justin, that congressmen often speak in front of Congress.
Very true. So another solid point there, James. The thing about this, Justin, is it's not like he spoke in front of a joint session of Congress. He spoke in front of some subcommittee, and Adam Carolla recently spoke in front of a subcommittee of Congress. So as much as I love Adam Carolla, I'm not sure he's an expert on much other than everything. I take that back immediately. He's an expert. But the point is, pretty much anyone can speak in front of any subcommittee of Congress. It's not difficult whatsoever. This is sort of made into a story for the sake of its fear factor, for the sake of its grandiose claim. That's why it's a story.
So how do we get in front of Congress then? I got plenty to tell them.
Dear Congress. Oh, man. I don't know. I can try to hook it up. I've got people.
Yeah, there you go.
The Midside testifies in front of Congress on the state of social justice.
Ah, no, on the state of Hollywood and all this Harvey Weinstein crap. I think we could have a lot to say about that.
There you go.
In fact, you know what? Why don't we talk about that?
Okay.
It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Now, usually I start out every art segment this season with a review. That was a promise I made to myself that I was going to do a review every episode. But I think there's a lot of crazy stuff going on in Hollywood right now. And I think it bears talking about. We talked about it a little bit last week at the end of the news segment with the whole breaking news of the Harvey Weinstein case. But this has gotten a lot worse since. A lot more people have been pulled into this. And I think we can delve into it a little bit deeper. So before I talk about a really interesting YouTube video / mini podcast that Midsider Alfred sent me, Daniel, sort of what's the update on what's going on around here? Like, isn't he now been, like before he wasn't, but now he's been full-fledged accused of rape, Harvey Weinstein?
Yes, I don't know the accuser's name, but he has been accused of rape now, and he's being investigated both by American, this is a bad way of saying it, speaking both American authorities and British authorities, but there are certain districts, I just don't know which ones they are. But he's being investigated now for actual rape. He's also been fired from his own company and basically become a pariah. So,
and other people have been pulled into sort of the orbit of this, where, you know, now Affleck's been accused of stuff.
There was an Amazon Studios executive who was accused.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. He stepped down. And now, actually, interestingly, and again, this is something Midsider Alfred pointed out. I sent him the article because Midsider Alfred is just researching this constantly and sending me articles on it. But I sent him an article about the Amazon guy stepping down. And then they didn't use the words romanticism and naturalism. But they basically said that they're going to be moving away from the more naturalistic fare they've been creating under that guy and moving more towards the romanticism that Jeff Bezos prefers. I don't remember the exact quote. I'll put the exact quote on the Facebook page. So if you go to facebook.com/themidside over this current week, I'll put it up Monday afternoon. The episodes go up Monday morning. I'll put the quote Monday afternoon. I'll pull it out from the article. But it's interesting to me that there's that link, because that's something we talked about before. Remember, we talked about how, like, the movies Weinstein produced, you know, such as Pulp Fiction, and, you know, Tarantino said he's going to gather his thoughts and his emotions and figure out what to say, which is basically code for, like, I knew about this and don't know how to cover my ass. So the type of art he's been creating, I think there's a reason and there's a link between this. And it's not a surprise that Hollywood's creating all of this stuff. So what Midsider Alfred sent was a talk by Stefan Molyneux called The Harvey Weinstein Scandal Aftermath. Now, before we go into the details of this talk, There's one very interesting quote in here that I kind of want to use to just gain some rhetorical credibility with the audience and also with James over here, because I know James hates Stefan Molyneux. So The first quote is he said, "This is kind of a teaching moment about how to achieve happiness. You know, reason equals virtue equals happiness. It's not a bad equation to start from." Now, the reason I'm pulling that quote out is, look, I don't agree with everything Stefan Molyneux says. I don't agree with everything anyone says except myself. And even a lot of times I disagree with myself. Like, I'm walking around having arguments with myself and people are like, "Who are you talking to?" It's like the voices in my head, obviously. But when somebody is that close, if I think of the history of humanity and everyone that disagrees with the way I believe and the way I live my life, when someone's that close, I'm not just going to dismiss them. I'm going to take seriously and listen to what he has to say and see what the good things and the bad things are. And the reason I do that is because, for instance, what we found here is a great example of the value of listening to other voices that I may not agree with 100%. Everyone with me?
Yeah. Stefan Molyneux especially is someone who has a lot of good sides to his general crazy. So, for sure.
Well, I wouldn't define him as crazy, but I don't want to argue about rhetoric. So I want to read some of the quotes here. So here are the quotes from his talk. "In your mind, there are two movies playing. Now, these two movies are who you are and what you're actually doing and who you want to be or who you pretend to be." And he continues, "Having only a documentary in your movie collection in your mind is not that great. It doesn't give you anything to aspire to. So it's great having a fantasy movie, and then there's a documentary. However, if these two diverge and you begin not using the fantasy to improve the documentary, not having the ideal to improve the empiricism of what you're actually doing, but if you just focus on the fantasy, and then the fantasy is where you live and the documentary decays and falls away, it doesn't vanish," as in the documentary doesn't vanish. Before I read the last quote, what's interesting to me here is he's basically talking about using the fantasy or art as romanticism. That's what he's talking about. It's the ideal. It's what you strive for. And this goes back to what we were talking about with the fitness and health. So interestingly, Daniel, you're saying this is a fitness and health episode. It's become that way again. Is this not the same thing I'm talking about? What life do you want? What do you have to do to get there every day? Isn't that what he's saying?
Yes.
So it's interesting that we're on the same, we're still on that same theme. So last quote here, and this is his call to action at the end of his talk. He talks about Harvey Weinstein, the way these people are. And this is his call to action. "Please, everyone, meditate on this. Ruminate on this. Think of this. What is the relationship between your fantasy and your documentary? What are the two movies? Are you looking between the two and trying to bring them closer together? Are you elevating the documentary to the levels of the ideal?" Again, that's what we were just talking about with the romanticism and the health. "Is your fantasy something that you aim towards and bring yourself towards, or is your fantasy a recoiling and an unreality that takes you like an addiction so that you can avoid ever looking at the documentary of who you actually are and what you've actually done?" Now, what's interesting to me is this builds on what I was talking about last week about why they embrace naturalism. Now, he doesn't quite come out and talk about, and I'm not sure he's there, the transition from romanticism to naturalism. He still seems to think that it's like people say, they're using art as this escapism. You know, they're using romanticism as this escapism. This is what we're fed about Hollywood. This idea that that's the value of art and movies, it's escapism. It doesn't help your own life. It helps you escape from it.
That's why I always hated that. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. Well, no, you hated it because it leads to exactly what I'm just going to say.
Yeah.
The step that I would take this further is not only are they using this art to escape from their lives because of what we're talking about is the Harvey Weinstein case and how bad of a person they are, right? When you do such horrific things, how hard is it to own up to what you've done? I mean, I'm a pretty good person. You know, I don't drink, I don't do drugs. I've never committed any violence. I don't lie. So I've never
those four things are absolutely equivalent, by the way.
They're absolutely equivalent? What do you mean?
Yeah, drinking, doing drugs, hurting other people, and lying. Like, those are basically on the same level. Sorry, go on.
I'm not saying they're all on the same level. I'm just saying they're examples of how I'm a good person.
I know. I'm giving you a hard time, Justin, but please continue.
You're having a hard time giving me a hard time. So you might want to work on that in the future.
I'm having a hard time listening to you talking about his hard time and him giving you a hard
whenever,
time.
Whenever he writes anything, he underlines each of the T's, counting them, and then he writes that number at the bottom of the page. That number is the teetotal.
You know, I'm making a really good point here, and this has been completely hijacked and shit on, Dr. Drew.
I'm sorry. Go on.
Maybe you could make it quicker if you had some whiskey. Jeez.
Jesus fucking Christ. All right. No, I'm a pretty good person, and when I do something wrong or that I'm ashamed of, I have a hard time looking at myself, and it takes a lot of self-control and integrity to say, no, this is what happened. I'm going to own up to it, and I'm going to make the changes I need to. So when you do something horrific as rape someone or enable a rapist, I think you have to do a lot to evade that, and not only evade it, make excuses for it. And this is how we get to them making naturalism. They've created this world where everything in naturalism is the external world's fault. We are all beholden to the external world, and life is suffering, nasty, brutish, and short, in the words of Thomas Hobbes, and we just have to survive that. And it becomes commiseration, or as I say, the human helplessness pact. We all agree to make this because we all agree that we suck and we've done shitty things, and that's just the lot in life of humanity. And that's how I think they get there, and it's very much in line with this idea that Dr. Drew says, that this is the era of trauma.
I think that's an excellent observation. As the guy who must be that guy every single time, I think that the mass psychologizing is probably not applicable in every case, but I think, generally speaking, that's an interesting way of thinking about the propensity to, you know, not just sort of casually like naturalistic art, but to sort of have this need to make naturalistic art, to have this unending passion for naturalism, which to me seems so insane as a psychological premise. Like, it's something that I can't even begin to empathize with.
Seriously.
Right, because there's two things about it. The one is, that's what you're talking about. Think about how they celebrate. It's not just people are making this. They give the awards. They give the Oscars. They give the Emmys to all of these movies. So it's something that they're not only saying, like, make it. They're saying, this is what needs to be celebrated.
But, yeah, it's not only that, but also the fact that they feel like they have to tear down anything that's not that. That anything that challenges the naturalism has to find some way to be cartoonish or too idealistic or not real. That's the one thing they push all the time is, you know, Snyder's movies just aren't real enough to be entertaining.
Think of Batman versus Superman. I mean, isn't that the perfect example of them not wanting to look at themselves? Doesn't Batman versus Superman force you to look at yourself and say, how am I living? I mean, that's what Batman says in the trailer for Justice League. He didn't just save people. He challenged them to be a better version of themselves. Isn't that what they're avoiding by not embracing romanticism? By embracing naturalism, they don't have to try and be a better version of themselves. Isn't that ultimately why they find these rationalizations to attack a movie like Batman versus Superman?
Maybe them. I have different reasons for attacking
Batman
versus Superman.
Well, they don't make it easy by poorly executing the Martha scene.
I think they see a movie like Batman versus Superman as an easy target because there's certain shortcomings it has that allow them to attack romanticism overall. They're package dealing the mistakes that movie made in with romanticism as such.
Well, it's the same. I mean, that's the same thing as critiquing a player who has his weaknesses, but isn't the kind of player you want. I mean, that's how people attack Randy Moss, right? I mean, he has all these great things about him, but he was a head case sometimes. So people say, oh, well, this is why Randy Moss wasn't that good or wasn't better than Jerry Rice. Well, no, you're not talking about him actually as a player. You're talking about these other things that are non-essentials to your discussion.
Yeah, it's a rationalization. But I don't think this is mass psychologizing. I think this is a sign of the culture's sense of life in the aggregate degrading, where you don't... We have certain premises as a culture in general that make us shrink away from the ideal instead of pursuing it. So.
Certainly, and it's certainly part of the culture at large. But when you talk about the degradation in the aggregate, I think it's exponentially worse in Hollywood. Have you ever noticed that as a general trend, and as Daniel was just saying, I'm speaking in generality, so this doesn't apply to everyone, right? There are people like Nolan and Snyder, and there are wonderful actors and actresses out there, and other talent, I'm sure, behind the scenes. There are a fuckload of people who work on every movie. So this is not everyone. Who I'm sure these are wonderful, amazing people, so I don't want to paint all of Hollywood with this brush. But have you ever noticed that generally, the longer someone stays in sort of this Hollywood, especially the in crowd, the more towards naturalism they go? I mean, for instance, look at someone like Donald Glover, right, who has this show now, Atlanta. You know, when he started on Community, when he started as an indie rapper, he was this great, creative, hilarious force. His stand-up special was very funny. And now I watched Atlanta. I watched the first two episodes because it was nominated for Best Comedy for the Emmys. There's nothing funny about it. I didn't laugh once. It's literally just portrayal of life in inner city Atlanta trying to make it in the rap game. And I didn't laugh once. So the more he's been involved, the more naturalistic he's become. Now we can wonder, does this have to do with the pandering and the wanting to fit in? Or does this have to do with, look at all these people that are entrenched in this Harvey Weinstein thing and how many people it's touching? I have to wonder, are there other such instances of this? And just based upon looking at what's happening with the Harvey Weinstein case, I have to think there are other instances of maybe not this, but other such terribly awful things that have happened.
I don't even think it's in question anymore. This is something where, so there are a couple of things. One is, I haven't watched it yet, but someone pointed out to me that the Lady Gaga documentary on Netflix actually opens up with a scene of her talking about how basically every producer she's ever worked with is trying to sleep with her. And then she says, like, oh, please don't put this in the film or whatever. So that's timely. But then also, like, someone was circulating a clip from 30 Rock, by the way, of Jenna making the joke that she felt like she was a stand-up human being because she passed up sex with Harvey Weinstein 3 out of the 5 times he asked.
Oh my God.
Well, yeah, Stefan Molyneux points out two things, that Seth MacFarlane made the same joke when he was hosting the Oscars, or somewhat he did, I believe it was Seth MacFarlane, when he was introducing the Best Supporting Actresses category. He said, now here are the women who no longer have to pretend to be attracted to Harvey Weinstein.
Jesus.
And everyone laughed.
I had no idea that this was just like an open secret. I mean, I'd heard that, but I didn't know what that meant for it to be an open secret. That's what it means.
Okay, secret? You've been listening to Yaron Brook too much. That's an open secret. Making fun
of
him.
Now, here's the thing. It's not... Here's the real problem.
The second thing I was going to say about that is also apparently Stefan Molyneux said that Harvey Weinstein produced The Hunting Ground, which is that awful documentary that has the false statistic that 1 in 4 women are raped in college.
Shit.
So maybe someone who's such a rampant sexual abuser would make that because he thinks that's reality because that's what he does.
Oh, yeah. That's like a sort of naturalism within your documentary.
Right, this is my reality, therefore it must be everyone's reality.
Yeah, that's a case of your documentary becoming a fantasy too, as an escape.
This is, I think, just the tip of the iceberg in terms of sexual abuse that actresses have faced in Hollywood. And we're going to see a lot more producers sort of unveiled here as sexual predators. Look, I didn't live in Hollywood for a long time, but the sort of like 2 years that Fize and I were there, we met dozens of actors and actresses. And, you know, if we got to know them to any degree, it became clear that they had mostly done things they were ashamed of with people. I don't want to say producers in particular, but with people of power to get certain roles or to get ahead in the game. This, to me, I think is going to be a scandal sort of similar to the Catholic Church scandal of child molestation. Hmm. Like, I'm sure it's rampant in Hollywood. And this is just the very beginning of this. So.
I have a speculation on this as part of a wider problem. Does it seem like Hollywood is, generally speaking, just the opposite of a meritocracy insofar as, like, you get jobs or you get published based on anything but actually being good. And so as a result, this is just one symptom of that. Obviously, like one of the worst possible symptoms, since you're, you know, putting women in this terrible psychological situation. But isn't that kind of just the culture in general? Is that very permissive?
James, you are 100% correct. You are 100% correct. This really puts into light the adage in Hollywood of hit who you know.
Yeah.
Because really how you get ahead in Hollywood is your relationships. Not your merit, your relationships. Now, there's a balance between the two. People have to know you to be able to know you're good. But it's not like people go, oh, that person was really good, let's bring them in. It's all your relationships. And that's for two reasons. It's for one, you need to surround yourself with people you can protect yourself with if this is what's going on. You need to know that if you're on a set, even on an indie set, that you have someone you can go to. So I get it on that level of self-protection. But it's also, these people like Harvey Weinstein are at the top. And as Daniel's saying, this is going to come out all over. They're not picking people based upon merit. Why are they not picking people based upon merit? Because they can get away with it. Because every once in a while, a Nolan or a Snyder or a Michael Bay comes along and makes them a shitload of money. So the only merit that's coming along is the geniuses. And we're still getting the genius art on some level until it threatens them, right? Until it threatens the establishment. And now we see after Justice League, Snyder is going to, you know, go out of the public limelight a little more. He's going to be less mainstream. But he still only got ahead because he was so good that people said, shit, we need to take advantage of this and make money to continue to enable our lifestyle, like parasites. Same thing with Nolan, same thing with Michael Bay. But what that does is, just like in America, it destroys the middle class of artists. That's why everything we have nowadays, I don't know, I've noticed this, I don't know if you guys have, we really only have great art and crap. There's no in between. There's no stuff that's just like, oh, that's okay. It's just like everything's either awful or really, really awesome.
I'd have to think about that some more, but certainly, you know, it manifests in, you have these, either things are hyper indie because they can't be involved in the system, or they're pushed entirely through the system and now most of the time fail, or at least a growing percentage of the time fail, like Blade Runner. So.
Right. And it's very rare that somebody makes it through who on their own merit. It's a very, very rare, unique thing. Like when you look at someone like, let's take Brian Fuller, the only reason he made it through is because he happened to find himself in the niche community of Star Trek. And because he was able to show his merit that way. But then who knows what Brian Fuller has done afterwards. I'm not accusing him of anything. I don't know. But if I speculate a little bit, he is a very gay man. And Hollywood is known as being a very gay industry. So do you think this doesn't happen with gay people as well?
It totally... who was it? Terry Crews came out this week and said that, you know, as late as something like 2 years ago or something, an executive grabbed his dick in a interview, basically saying, like, you know, implying that you can have sex with me if you want your career to go somewhere. And think about for a moment the fucking cojones it takes to grab Terry Crews's dick. Because that man will rip you in half.
Yeah, I wouldn't shake that dude's hand if he didn't want me to. Like, Jesus.
Wow. So, of course this happens in that sphere. Of course.
Wow.
So it's just, it's a lot to think about, and it's a lot to consider as we move forward here. And the final thing I'm going to say is exactly what you just said, Daniel, comparing it to the Catholic Church scandal. We have to ask ourselves spiritually why we follow people who are doing what the Catholic Church did with the molestation. Why are those the people that are leading us spiritually? Well, that's the same thing. Artistically, spiritually, why are we following these people artistically, spiritually, if this is the kind of people they are?
You're here.
Let's move on.
Trailer takedown.
Before we do some tackling and hugging, we have another trailer this week, which we're not going to do either two because obviously we're all sort of hugging it. But during Monday Night Football this past week, they premiered the Star Wars The Last Jedi trailer. I'll talk a little bit about it first before we throw it to Daniel. The two main things I noticed is just the way they handled Rey and Kylo Ren's stories in it. They seem to be hinting at Kylo Ren killing Princess Leia, which I suppose is the only way you could continue his story, especially with Carrie Fisher dying in real life. And then the question I had for you, Daniel, is Luke says early in the trailer, I've only ever seen power like this one other time. He's talking about Rey and her training and everything, and he's very scared of her. My question is that a reference to Luke himself, or is he referencing, did he try to train Kylo Ren?
I think what they're trying to direct you to in the trailer is Kylo Ren, mm-hmm. because the footage, when he's talking about that, is the footage of his Jedi Temple being decimated that you just see a little tiny bit of in The Force Awakens, and that is alluded to. So that's what they're trying to do. Obviously, there could be different interpretations. He might be talking about Darth Vader, in fact.
He's talking about Kylo Ren because he's the one who tried to train Kylo Ren, and then it turned out terrible.
I think that is probably the correct answer, James. The Star Wars trailers do have a history of misdirection of a certain degree. So, they're trying to. I think it's likely that they're talking about Kylo Ren, but it's not beyond the pale to think that they could be referring to someone else. But we'll see. Certainly, yes, Justin. They're trying to make the paths of Rey and Ren very close, one on the light, one on the dark, and to see how that converges, if it will converge at all.
Well, that's what I was just going to say, is it seems like they're going, Rey's going to go extremely light, and Kylo Ren's going to go extremely dark, and either Rey's going to redeem Kylo Ren, or they're going to meet in the middle and both become gray Jedis. Because even in the first one, the image to me is Kylo Ren saying, train with me, I will help you be better. Like, that's like setting up there visually that they're going to eventually grab hands and help each other.
Yeah. You know, it's also just gray, not gray Jedi, just gray.
Really?
What?
It's the gray. Huh. Yeah. Because Jedi is light and Sith is dark. The gray are.
They couldn't come up with a better word for that. It's just the gray.
I prefer the eye. It's just a third option. It's just a totally, it's not a blending of the two. But, well, you'll remember in the teaser, I think, she says, like, oh, I see the light, I see the darkness. And then Luke, I think, says, there's so much more. And so I think maybe he trained Kylo Ren in the so much more, and then it went off the rails. And so now he's training woman, what's her name?
Rey. Mary Sue.
Now he's training Rey in the ways of the so much more, and because she's so powerful, he's scared that it'll go off the rails with her too.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's certainly what we're going to see happen in this film. Just overall, I couldn't be more excited for this movie.
Yeah, Mark?
They're knocking it out of the park with the trailers and whatnot. And they're doing the thing that I love about good, old-fashioned movie marketing, which is don't reveal everything that's going on.
Right.
We're going to see this later in the trailer takedowns, like, where you're watching the entire goddamn movie in the trailer.
Yeah.
Like, just tease us. Wet our beak. Make me interested. You know, that's what they're doing. And they're doing it.
Build the anticipation, because it's better when you fuck if there's a lot of foreplay. That's what he's saying.
That's right. That's exactly. Right.
Is that analogy on point, Daniel?
1 for 3. Good job.
Hey, I have the batting average of a professional baseball player.
There you go.
Here's
something I was surprised at. Mark Hamill can act.
Yeah.
I didn't realize. Indeed. I mean, he's done voice acting in the past that was, I don't know if it was good or not, but this, he was good.
He's super compelling.
I was going to say he's always good. Like,
I don't know.
Well, in the original, in the very first Star Wars, he's not great as an actor. I think he matured quite a bit in the time where he had to do a lot of voice acting. So, yeah. Absolutely. Couldn't be more excited. And we're not hugging and tackling this, but F you, Justin, I'm hugging.
I'm hugging,
well,
too.
Well, I will tell you one thing I'm going to tackle about in this thing. The fucking Porg. I already fucking hate them. Like, why do they just randomly have that bird screaming? What is the purpose of that bird?
Because in the Star Wars universe, there in every movie, there must be an adorable creature that they can sell a ton of merchandise.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what it is? What was it? What was it in the last one? BB-8.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's Chewbacca's BB-8 now.
Yeah. So I know you hate the Porg. I knew unequivocally you'd hate the Porg. It is already a goddamn internet sensation.
Is it? Oh, God.
Yes. Porg merchandise is flying off the shelves already.
I like Ewoks, though, so I don't know. Maybe I'm a hypocrite.
Slight flaw. Can you really make Chewbacca a Han Solo-type character? Like, Chewbacca was always the sidekick, and he never speaks in a way the audience can understand him. It's like making R2-D2 the new Han Solo. Like, you can't... No. Just... I don't get it.
You apparently, James, have never watched the, like, Clone Wars cartoons, where R2-D2 is basically an action hero.
I have not.
Yes. I think Chewie, for the most part, will be the sidekick to Rey in a lot of ways.
Okay.
So, we'll see where that goes. But he does have a Porg now, which is adorable.
Right.
It's a pet having a pet.
Kickity kick.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to some hugging and tackling.
First trailer.
Hey Arnold, the Jungle Movie is the movie sequel to the Nickelodeon Nicktoon, Hey Arnold. This is, of course, the series about the kid with the head shaped like a football and about him going to school in New York City with Helga Pataki, who was in love with him and his quirky band of friends. This movie is they go to a field trip to some South American, Central American city/country, and that's the same place where his parents went missing. Now, for me, I never really liked this show. I watched some of it. It's a decent show. I couldn't stand Helga Pataki, just like I can't stand Angelica and the Rugrats. I don't like this, like, strong female character who's also a bitch. I just don't. I haven't enjoyed it ever. Even when I was a child, I didn't enjoy it. But I do find it compelling that they are going the one angle they could go, which is, like, years later, we're going to find out why Arnold's parents were never around. Like, that's kind of interesting. So maybe I'm going to watch it one day, but for me, this is a tackle.
Tackle.
Daniel, since you never had cable, does that change your perception of this?
Barely knew what this was. I thought this was a Family Guy sequel with Stewie grown up. I'm looking this up right now. So the pilot aired in 96, and the show effectively ended in 99, although it had this weird fifth season that ran from 2001 to 2004. That was only 24 episodes, but took 3 years to air, according to Wikipedia. So,
man,
it has effectively been out of the zeitgeist since 2004. Who was clamoring for another Hey Arnold movie? Who is the target audience for this? No one knows this property. I mean, are they trying to reboot it?
Yes. I mean,
literally, it has to be us.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
It's not me. I grew up with 14 channels, 7 of which were shopping.
It's the three of us. They're trying to open it up into the mid-side market.
I'm tackling for the pure reason that I don't know what the fuck this is.
Tackle.
Yeah. James?
I never liked Hey... I only ever watched, like, a couple minutes of Hey Arnold when I was a kid, and I was turned off, actually, by the animation. And as an adult, I think I can identify why, is because it came off as very grotesque to me. The way... Sort of, like, another example of this is, like, Cat Dog or Ed, Edd n Eddy. Like, the animation, like, having a stylized cartoon of a person obviously has benefits, but at some point, like, my brain just registers it as, like, this is a fucked up, weird ass person with a problem. Like, and I don't know if that's what they're going for. It would sort of lend itself towards this naturalism point where, like, see how ugly Hey Arnold is? He has a football for a head. That means no matter how ugly you are, it's okay. Like, I don't know if they're going for that, but that's how it feels to me.
Not to be naturalistic, but are all the doors in the Hey Arnold universe that much wider? Like, how the fuck?
I don't know if I've ever actually seen Arnold walk through a door. That's a really interesting question. I'm going to go back and binge watch Hey Arnold now just to...
look for all the door scenes?
Look for the tweet this week. Confirmed. Hey Arnold, Arnold walks through a door in episode X, scene 3, at the 5-minute mark.
Great. Second trailer.
How to Talk to Girls at Parties is a
tackle.
Tackle.
I tackled this as soon as I saw the picture on the YouTube video.
Tackle.
Okay.
What the fuck is this?
Okay, should I summarize it?
They're wearing like carbon fiber jumpsuits.
So there's a group of punk guys in 1977 in London, and one of them goes to a party. They all go to a party, and one of them becomes interested in this girl who is apparently from an alien species. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to hug this, but just to defend it a little bit, I do like the sort of references to individualism and living your life for yourself, and that seems to be what appeals to being human and living on Earth for the alien girl, because she seems to have to choose between life with the punk and life on her own planet. So that could...
She still has to shit on Earth, though. Oh, it's a little small, and I thought it'd be more colorful.
Oh, I thought you were, like, saying, like, she had trouble with the bathrooms on Earth.
She may. One does not know how they excrete.
Yeah. So...
What the fuck is this?
I'm tackling as well, because this just seems very poorly executed.
Tackle.
I don't even... Is all of Neil Gaiman's work just this drug-induced... weird haze of a nonsense world? Everything he writes seems to just be fucking bizarre beyond the pale.
What Daniel's referring to is this movie is based on a short story by Neil Gaiman, the sci-fi author who's done things such as Sandman and American Gods.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't get his quote-unquote genius. I just don't. I don't get it. And this movie I don't understand at all. Not interesting. I was more interested when I thought it was just a movie about punk kids in 1977 Britain. And then they got into the alien part, and I was like, I'm out. This is terrible. So, tackle.
James, any final notes?
No. Goodbye.
Third trailer.
Pacific Rim Uprising was made just for Daniel. Mm-hmm. This is the sequel to Pacific Rim, the not hit movie from Guillermo del Toro about giant bots called Jaegers, not to be confused with the alcohol, that fight giant, what's the word? I keep thinking
Kaiju, of them. Kaiju.
Kaiju, that's the word, thank you. Yeah. They fight giant kaiju, which are Japanese monsters similar to the Cloverfield monster or Godzilla. They come out of the ocean.
I thought that was Korean alcohol.
Okay, so American alcohol, or no, Jaeger. German alcohol fights Korean alcohol in this movie. That's the summary.
Right. Jaeger versus yes, soju. Exactly. Perfect.
And also continue. They have Chiribos as their little pets in the movie. So the soju comes out of a crack in the ocean floor, and they come up and they try and destroy American cities. So the international community makes these giant robots called Jaegers to fight them. This movie stars another English black man rather than Idris Elba. This time stars John Bodega?
Boyega.
Boyega. I just always say his name is Bodega. John Boyega. And a woman that looks like Daisy Ridley, because they probably tried to cast Daisy Ridley and could not cast Daisy Ridley.
Because there's probably a contract somewhere that says that John Boyega and Daisy Ridley cannot appear in any other movie together for the rest of their lives. So.
Yeah, maybe they tried and she was like, I'm out. I can't do this. Or he was like, I'm not doing it if she's in it.
Yeah.
But did you notice she looks a lot like Daisy Ridley?
She did look a lot like Daisy Ridley.
They were definitely going for that. So, for me personally, I think this looks visually, aesthetically, I like the way it looks. I like the way visually and aesthetically the first one looked. I did. And I enjoy the fact that it's just a movie about humans fighting off monsters to save humanity. I love that they brought back Charlie Day. I think that's ridiculous. And also his sidekick, partner scientist, who I've only ever seen in this and the Doctor Who spinoff Torchwood. Somehow this guy still has a career, which is ridiculous. It's like, I'm only going to act, but it's only going to be in the Pacific Rim movies. So there's a lot I can appreciate about this, but I just have a really bad memory of the story of the first one just being a really bad, boring story and poorly executed. So for that, I'm tackling this.
Tackle.
You, sir, are objectively wrong. The first story, while not some complex, amazing Shakespearean epic, was everything it told you it was going to be from the very beginning. which was monsters fighting robots, and it was glorious. To show you how sort of dead on I think I am, tomato meter score 71, audience score 77. That's right, they nailed it. Pacific Rim came out in 2013, so long ago, and it did in fact make money. Justin, it's Mr. Not a Hit. Production budget was $190 million. Worldwide, they made $411 million.
Okay, so it just didn't make money in the U.S. then. It's an international hit.
It's an international hit. Yes, totally. And I am going to see it because I fucking loved watching the first movie in theaters. It was terrible, but it was glorious in its terribleness. So, super hug from me. Giant robotic hug.
James, before you go, I just want to be clear that Guillermo del Toro is not directing this one. Stephen S. DeKnight is, who he's known for the first season. He show ran the first season of Daredevil, I believe.
Well, with that information, I have exactly the same opinion as I did before. And that is, whatever, I'll see this if I have to. No, that makes it sound like it's bad. Like, if my friends want to go out and see this, like, yeah, like, you know, if Daniel's in town, he's like, oh, we gotta watch this fucking robot movie. Yeah, I'll join him. But, whatever. Like, it's not my thing. I'm about guns. This is giant robots.
And they have guns. They have giant guns on the giant robots. I mean, they're just Megazords.
It's not quite the same.
All I know is when that giant monster comes out at the end, that's even bigger than it's the biggest monster ever, and it's even bigger than the robots. I was like, this is just Power Rangers.
Yeah, which is fine. It's not my thing.
So is that a tackle?
It's a tackle.
Tackle. Final trailer.
Beyond Skyline is the sequel to the movie Skyline, which nobody fucking saw. This is another sci-fi movie. And it looks like the big screen version of Falling Skies, where aliens attack Earth, they kidnap the guy's son, and then it's a mission to save the guy's son and find him. Again, I appreciate that it's sci-fi. I appreciate how it looks. It looks pretty high quality visually. But technology is so good now that I feel like a lot of movies are going to look this good nowadays. There's nothing to me that's appealing about this story. So I am likewise, because it's generic, tackle.
Tackle.
Daniel?
Man, do you remember when Eric Balfour was a leading man? No, because he was terrible at it? Yes, that's correct. He was the lead in Skyline early on, the first one. I watched this trailer and I thought, haven't I seen this movie? Isn't this exactly the same as another movie I've seen before? And then I realized, oh, it is a sequel. Okay. Because it is the exact same movie as the first one, so already saw it. Don't need to see it again. It was bad then. It's going to be worse now. Tackle.
Tackle.
James.
This looks relatively interesting. I didn't know about the first one. So it's sort of like I'll give it a chance if I don't have to go out of my way for it. I'm really non-committal this time.
Yeah.
But that's just, I don't know. It's just kind of, that's kind of what a lot of this stuff is right now. Not to shit on any of these two last movies, but like, you know, that's kind
maybe
of
this
that's
is evidence
of the norm.
Maybe this is evidence for my point that we have a lot of mediocre movies and shows being made. Oh
yeah absolutely. It's also evidence, it's also sort of an instance of what I was talking about a couple times ago, where just for me personally in my like aesthetic journey, I'm just getting more jaded in general. Like, these sorts of stories are getting told over and over again, and I'm starting to just reject it, kind of just say like, why can't we just do something new and actually inspiring?
By the way, Eric Balfour was the lead in the 2010 smash flop Dino Shark, for all of you wondering.
Hugging Dino Shark. So, James, can you just, again, say the word tackle, please?
Tackle.
Tackle.
All right, well, Midsider Dan's job is safe as the voice of Trailer Takedown, so just to be clear about that. I also do not want to deal with the fucking idiots on Reddit this week, so I'm just going to skip to the end of the episode. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
I learned that Eminem is a person who does music things, and that conservatives don't like him anymore. So, that was new for me.
James?
I learned about sort of, just sort of integrated my view of how Hollywood sort of works. I'd always heard about this sort of corruption on the sexual side. I'd always heard about the corruption on the, and then I had sensed the corruption on the side of, like, it's not who you are, it's who you know. But now it's sort of all starting to come together. And I just wonder, like, how did we get there in this industry, which is such an important industry to this country? I don't know. It seems why this industry as opposed to others. Other industries aren't this corrupted.
Yeah.
I can tell you that.
Sad. Kind of
interesting.
Justin, what did you learn? Justin,
nothing.
Did you learn this?
You
week?
Learned nothing.
Oh, I think the Geek Chat screwed up, so I will cut this part out because I'm assuming you already asked me, but I didn't hear it.
Yes.
I learned why North Korea has not been wiped off the face of the earth yet, and it's really just for the sake of Seoul, South Korea. So It's very bizarre how world politics work that way, and defenses and military works, is the idea that we have this really evil person and really awful nation that needs to be eradicated, or at least, you know, we need to go in there and try with as minimal loss as possible to save the people that are in there. But we can't do that because if we did, even more people, more innocent people would die in South Korea. And that's terrible and horrifying. And I hope one day that can be reconciled.
Nice, uplifting way to end the show. If you too were uplifted by today's episode, you can let us know on social media. All over the place, at The Midside. That's Facebook, Twitters, Instagram, Snapchat, at The Midside. Where you can tell Justin all the things you learned this week. You can also reach us at our website, themidside.com/podcast, where you can listen to all the previous episodes of this show, all the ones you missed, and you can start to think about what you're going to vote for Farcical Story of the Year, as the Midside Awards are coming up quick here. End of the year, coming up quick. And then you can also go to themidside.com/store, where you can buy a shirt with the logo on it. The classic logo on the shirt.
Classic.
Classic logo. Or you can go to themidside.com/Patreon. Patreon's a platform where you, our most loyal listeners, can give us monies every time we produce a piece of content. And that helps us buy things like hosting, advertising, and helps us keep the lights on. We love lights. That's a great thing to do. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can do so on iTunes or Google Play. You can get the latest episodes delivered directly to your new iPhone 8 or the new upcoming iPhone 10, because fuck you, 9.
Wait, no one... I thought 7, 8, 9. That's what happened.
What? Oh. God. That took me longer than it should have to figure out that was a joke. Okay.
Dad joke.
So, you can get delivered directly to your new phone if you subscribe on iTunes or Google Play. While you're there on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-star review of the show.
All of the stars.
All the stars. Even if you hate it, be like, these guys suck ass. 5 stars. That's fine. We don't care about that. Text is meaningless. The stars are everything. It'll help us pass our old arch enemy, Welcome to Night Vale. There can be only one welcome to, and it's the Midside, so fuck you, Night Vale. And, if you can't do any of those things, that's fine. We get it. Sometimes it takes effort to click stars. That's fine. But here's the one thing you can do, is tell a friend. Go to work on Monday, and even if you have to pretend that one of your coworkers is your friend, you can do so and tell them about the Midside podcast. Listen to it over lunch. Listen to it in a boring meeting that your boss is rambling on about nonsense quarterly reports. And, share the Midside with all the people in your life. It will make the world a better, more romantic place. And until next time, goodbye.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.